International rugby is back. Scotland will host world champions South Africa, Southern Hemisphere heavyweight Australia, Pacific Islanders Tonga, and the exciting Japan at BT Murrayfield this October and November. Adult tickets start from just £16 and kids can come for a quid. For more information on the Autumn Nation series and to secure your tickets for the return of international rugby to BT Murrayfield, check out scottishrugby.org. We can't wait to welcome you back.
Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. Joining us on the show this week is none other than Scotland legend and former captain, Greg Laidlaw. Well, Rachel Mossy, it's great to be back after a couple of weeks of relaxation, but back to the busyness of Scottish rugby. And, you know, in my absence, we've seen Scotland women with those two back-to-back victories. Well done, Rach. We've seen the continuation of the United Rugby Championship with round three taking place this week. And Super Six has been trundling along, and I think we all agree it's been a great tournament. It's almost coming to an end, but still a lot.
Where have you been? So, I'm going to interrupt. How did you manage to get a couple of weeks off at this time?
You get to a certain level of management, Mossy. You have to go through certain hurdles, but sometimes you get it signed off. No, I've just been away down south with the family, just switched off for a bit, just before we get into this busy period. Because I think it's crazy, isn't it, that where we are now in October and this year's just flying by. And, you know, we've had the women's qualifiers, we're about to go into the autumns, and we were talking before, Super Six has been going since July, so it feels like it's been a long rugby year already. But it was good to get a wee break, but it's great to be back with you guys on the podcast and looking ahead to what's coming. But I think before we look ahead, let's look back. Super Six, as I said, has been going great. It's been brilliant to watch. There's been some really close games. Mossy, I know you've been doing some stats and research into that, which we'll come on to in a second. But we're getting towards the final. I think we're starting to see how things could line up and how they could position themselves. But Mossy, first question for you. Super Six, the results coming in, how's it all shaping up for you?
Well, we know the final. We know it's going to be Ayr Southern Knights, or Southern Knights here at the Dalmhelf Stadium in Edinburgh. Not this weekend, the following Sunday. Still on up to third after the weekend. Watson is fourth, Heriot's fifth, Ballymuir Bears sixth. And the stats I was doing, it's not... Somebody might want to double check them, but just quickly, we've seen so many close games, so many games won in the last moments. And one of the massive kind of aims, I believe, of the tournament was to get competitive rugby, really meaningful competitive rugby where you can test players under pressure. In terms of the speed and the strength and the fitness and the collisions and the physicality is a markup, and we can see that. It's quite easy to see, but I kind of went through the nine rounds of fixtures. So out of the 27 games played, 13 of them, so 48% have been within a score. And then if you extend that to kind of two scores, 70% of the games have been within two scores. So it's putting players and officials and coaches in that pressure that, you know, the decisions they make or the skills they execute or fail to execute has a pretty meaningful effect on the game because they've been so close. Just look at the weekend, Ayr 17, Southern Knights 11. It wasn't a great game. It was wet and murky. And I actually got the feeling that because those two teams pretty much knew at that point in the final, they didn't want to show their hand, really. Ayr were the better team to start with, got ahead. Southern Knights did well to stick in and dig in and stay with them. But I got the feeling nobody wanted to show their hand too much. One score game. Heriot's still in a one-point game. Still in getting away win at Heriot's. Again, in kind of murky conditions, really, but did really well, scored crack and try. And then the game on Sunday, that was brilliant. Watsonians lost it to Ballymuir Bears. And Ballymuir Bears, I've said before the game, they've almost like been better than the league position shows. They've played some great stuff. They had a kind of high error rate to start with, but... are really playing a quick brand of rugby, and it was brilliant to watch on Sunday. And the passes stacked, they put Waterlands under a huge amount of pressure and came out in top 29 35. So yeah, so all three games there, that's my point, all really within one score. So it's good rugby, good stuff.
Yeah, no, it has been great to watch. And it's been great to see, you know, all the drama and the story and the narrative kind of unfold on the pitch. So this Friday, as you say, we've got Southern Knights against Stirling County at 7:30. On Saturday, 9th of October, we have Heriots against the Boroughmuir Bears. And on Sunday, the 10th of October, we have Watsonians against Ayrshire Bulls. So, as you said, the final's not quite here yet, but there's still some rugby to be played before that from the Fosrock Super Six.
Did you manage to see any games, Rich, over the weekend?
No, didn't see any of the Super Six this weekend. There's nothing to add there.
that was the ritual in camp, wasn't it? Watching the
Friday night game in Italy. Great. Yeah, but we switch off. But no, not this weekend. This weekend was rugby free for once.
Was there any but we look down south then, Rach, for the Premier 15s? Because I guess, you know, we've seen with Super Six, you know, Fosrock Super Six, the investment that's been put into that league is growing. You probably, the Premier 15s has been doing that for a few more years, but it just shows you the investment and the time that you put into it, you can have a really good product. But give us an oversight of how Loughborough are getting on down. So I think there was a good result in the opening week, maybe, but was it a loss recently? Was it against Harlequins? Or?
Yeah, so they had a tough start. We had, I think we started with, I can't remember the order of it, but Harlequins, Wasps and Saracens. And obviously we've got quite a large Scottish contingent, so I think we're missing about 8 players. But so we had a tough first 3 games. We got first win last weekend away. Yeah. At Darlington, and we play Worcester at home this weekend, so look to try and build on that and get a wee bit of momentum. We go into quite a long break now, so we have a long break over the autumns. Obviously the league is kind of based around the English women's programme, and they've got 4 autumn internationals, so quite a nice break, I guess, for us as well, coming off the back of the qualifiers and in the build up to Japan. So yeah, it's been a wee bit of a tough start, but I think everyone's excited to get back out there this weekend.
Moving back up north of the border then, and let's look at the United Rugby Championship, which is still in its infancy, but we're now looking ahead to round 3. A bit of a mixed bag of results from the weekend, with Benetton beating Edinburgh by 1 point, 28-27. But Glasgow Warriors getting their first home win against the Sale Sea Sharks with a 35-24 victory. Rach, I know that you watched the Glasgow Warriors game. What did you make of Glasgow's performance? It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think like the first half in particular, like they were so clinical right from the word go. And it was, you know, such an entertaining game of rugby to watch for anyone, whether you were a Glasgow supporter or not, particularly the try. I think it was around 35 minutes just before half time. Like probably just one of the best team tries I think I've probably seen ever. But I think probably one of the tries of the season for sure. And it's such early doors. But for me, Glasgow were just really exciting to watch. They looked like they knew exactly how they wanted to play. It wasn't like massively structured at times, but it was clinical, like I say. And I think you mentioned like Cole Forbes, like was just so exciting to watch. I loved it. Sam Johnson back to playing some of his best rugby that we've seen. And I also really liked the back row in terms of, I think that 3 players complement each other so well. Jack Dempsey is so powerful as a ball carrier. You've got Tom Gordon, who defensively for me is just like unreal, you know, in terms of his tackling work, but also his breakdown work in defence. And then obviously Ryan Wilson, who we talked about a lot last season, has come back in similar form in terms of just getting through a lot of the hard work and doing all the annoying stuff that back rows need to do, but doing it well. So that, I thought it was a really good performance. And, you know, obviously Sale Sea Sharks came back into it a little bit in the second half. So Glasgow did really well to hold out.
Yeah, that back row is awesome, eh? Then you think Darge and the way that Rory Darge has been playing and played the week before, Matty Fagerson. I mean, there's all host, and it underlines the depth they've got. But you're right, they were cracking at the weekend, because actually the Sharks weren't particularly strong, but probably the strongest area of their team was their back row. Mm-hmm. So to match that and blow them away, you know, when you're playing against a team, if that's perceived as their strongest bit and you go right at it and you you know, head to head, be better than your opposite number, it can be quite demoralising. What did you think of the no try, Sione's no try from the set piece scrum?
Oh, so when the kind of push on the
harsh, eh?
I thought it was really harsh. Yeah, yeah, like I think that is just a rugby incident, if you know what I mean. Like if someone gets in your way, you move them out of the way. I don't think there's any malice in it. It's a difficult one, but
I totally agree, because if Sione's in the position to take the ball,
yeah.
When the ball's passed, if he's ahead of, I think it was Ross Thompson, and he makes a collision, I get it. But he can't stop dead.
Yeah.
But in that kind of disrupted the momentum, Shark came back in. It did well to stay in it as long as it did. But you got the feeling of that again, another quality set piece try, running at space, finding the space, executing it, good support on the inside. At that point in the game, you thought, wow, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be even more impressive, and it kind of switched the momentum. But again, you deal with these things, you can understand. Yeah. I think because the defender actually went off his feet, it made it look really quite bad. But
yeah,
like for me, Sione was in a position to take the ball when Ross passed it. So yeah, should have stuck. But no, I agree. I think it's difficult. And I know both Edinburgh and Glasgow play South African opposition this weekend. And there's been a lot kind of said and written about the South African team's kind of form so far. And I agree, I think they have to change their game a wee bit. And this is en masse. Obviously, there's four teams and all do different things, but it's almost as if they have to change or evolve their game plan a wee bit, because they're relying so much on physicality in a kicking game. It almost as if they're not quite into the flow of the game yet. Now, the reason I say we have to be careful is because if we were to send Edinburgh or Glasgow or whoever away for a month and play four away games on the bounce, it would be hard, especially with the COVID and the restrictions and everything. It would be hard to have a true representation of where your team is, especially in a new league. So I think getting the South African teams early is a good thing, because I think they will evolve. I think they will improve. They'll have obviously a whole host of home games as well, as they get stronger, as they get more used to the league. So I think it's too early to judge them, but it's good that we're getting them early, because they will get better. But they'll have to, from my opinion, they'll have to evolve their game, because at the moment it's just a wee bit too one-dimensional to be overly successful.
So we looked at Glasgow's performance the weekend. What about Edinburgh then, Mossy? A one-point loss, a drop goal in, I think, the 83rd or 84th minute. It's never a nice way to lose a match. It's never a nice way to lose any match. But just your thoughts on the performance. Is it one that they just got away from them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the frustrating thing is you've got in a winning position. There's so many good bits, absolutely. But the overriding emotion for the players and for Mike and, you know, the coaches will be, actually, we got ourselves in a winning position and then couldn't capitalise on it. As you say, it was a 40-metre drop goal. It was one of the cleanest strike, but somehow, when it came off his boot, it looked horrific, and then it actually got better the longer it was in the air. But it's a 19-year-old Marine who kicked the drop goal. He played in Cardiff in the under-20 setup, and Benetton have got a lot of good young players, and good young players coming in and doing good things in the game isn't revolutionary, but doing things consistently well under pressure in a game like that underlines the talent he's got. So he came in, he kicked a penalty, he kicked a conversion to go ahead, and then Edinburgh then went back ahead and then dropped a goal. So he's a quality player. I think Benetton will win a lot of games at home, but it doesn't change the fact that Edinburgh will be frustrated to get into a winning position and then not capitalise. Some of the rugby that both teams played was amazing. I genuinely get the feeling that there was maybe it was a subconscious feeling, but or a subconscious reaction, but rugby over the summer got quite dull, and it got headlines for being quite dull. Yeah. And it's almost as if a lot of the early games we've seen so far, players, coaches, you know, in all leagues really, has been like, let's actually just go for this. Because it looks, I know international rugby can be different, a wee bit different, obviously. But I have been enthused by, like, a lot of the early season rugby. And that game, that honestly, the Edinburgh Treviso game, of course it's mistakes, of course it's erratic, but some brilliant stuff. And the insistence on sticking to your guns and playing what's perceived as high risk rugby. Now, it's, I don't believe something's high risk if it gives you a better chance of winning. I think it's quite sensible rugby. But it's sensible if you do it accurately. So the accuracy is what needs to, you know, everybody has to aspire to having a really accurate game like that. But I do think it's the right thing to do. And it's cracking to watch. Like, across a lot of leagues. I don't know if you've thought the same.
No, Mossy, you're right. It's been great to actually just have rugby back, professional sport back, to be able to watch. And, you know, we've got all these talented athletes that haven't been able to do anything for such a long period of time. They all have been chomping at the bit to just get out and play. So I think they're all put on a showcase for us as well.
But I think more technically, I don't know, Rach, you might, well, you've been playing recently, you've been involved in the games that we're talking about and how exciting, how, you know, dynamic they are. There seems to be a switch in terms of set piece attack or more creative first phase attacks, that instead of almost having the primary goal or retaining possession, it looks to me as decisions now, let's try and score.
Yeah,
I know it's easy to say, isn't it? But I think it's quite a big difference in terms of whether you're setting up to retain possession, to work a field position, to try and find, you know, space at some point. It's totally different to saying, right, how can we stress the defence? So our first strike, when there's potentially, you know, 16 people in one corner of the field at once, how can we really punish the defence? And it looks as if that's the way of thinking. I don't know if it's just early season and better weather, but it looks like that from the sidelines.
Yeah, I'd say from our point of view, in terms of how we were looking to play, we definitely had a much more attacking kind of outlook on our set piece attacks. And I think as well, like, it does make sense. Like, it's probably one of the most stressful defensive positions to be in as a defence, both off a line out and off a scrum. So I think teams definitely are looking to play that way. And I think, like, the way we played out in Italy probably showed a little bit of that. I don't think we necessarily showed our hand as much as we could have done in terms of what we'd prepped, but it's definitely the way we are looking to play offset piece for sure.
I think as well, I think going, like, there's probably a phase of rugby or an era of rugby where maintaining possession and building through the phases was, the plan was that you would eventually break an opposition down. I think that's, I maybe said this before, like, almost on its head now. I think the higher the number of phases you go through, the stronger the defence gets, because everybody's fit, everybody's powerful, everybody's strong, everybody can bounce back to their feet, get into line, fill the field. So actually, rather than now try and get to 8 or 9 phases to score, your best chance to score could be the first one or two, because I genuinely think the condition of the players now is makes it harder the more phases you go through, or you're relying on a mistake more than actually having the ability to create the space to execute it. But I'd say that we're getting off tangent a wee bit from the games at the weekend, but it looks like that in that Benetton-Edinburgh game from both sides. It looked as if, and you add that to the Edinburgh Scarlets game week before, some of the Glasgow stuff you spoke about in the first half, certainly against the Sharks, which it's good. There's a mindset that you want to attack space, be clinical and be accurate. So it's hopefully continues this weekend.
Also, you mentioned the drop goal that won it for Benetton. Reminded me of you in 2003 against Australia when you sunk that absolute rocket from about, well, it was about 43 metres as well, was it not? About the same distance?
I don't know about that.
So humble. But Rach, you ever sunk a drop goal in a game? You ever done that?
Not yet. It's coming. Been working on it.
Not yet. You must have dropped a bullet at some point, no? Have you attempted one?
Yeah, maybe.
Have you gone for one?
Yeah.
Well, are you ever, Jamie, and your illustrious back row
when did I not try it?
Have you ever said, you know, please tell me you tried a drop goal.
I can imagine you being that type of player that would try things and everyone would be like, oh, not again, Jamie.
Not again.
The clock's gone red, we're down by 5, I'll go for a drop goal.
You only get 3 points.
Exactly, that's the kind of player I am. Mind game.
Delighted once again to be joined by former Scotland captain, a big fan's favourite, and everybody's favourite really, Greg Laidlaw. Greg, you joined us for Japan, second season, going into a second season in Japan. So, well, how are you, first of all?
Very well, thanks, Mossy. Always nice to hear a familiar voice, albeit over the new way we communicate these days, or over Zoomer. So, I'm really good, thank you. We're in the middle of pre-season, but So working hard heading into the second season, but can't complain at the minute. The weather's lovely and, you know, having good fun.
What point in the middle of pre-season? Now, I suppose the general rule of thumb is that the Japanese train really, really hard and for long periods. Their competitive season isn't really as long as other nations, but that, which by default means the pre-seasons are longer. How long is yours?
Yeah, we've got about just over 4 months leading this time around, which is obviously quite long and something probably, well, certainly we wouldn't be used to from the Northern Hemisphere type of world in terms of rugby sense. But we're really lucky this season. We've got Rob Penny's coming. He's the head coach. He's got his background, obviously, Canterbury Crusaders. Coached a little bit in Munster for people who know in the Northern Hemisphere as well. So really, really good coach. Only been, I think, you know, he's maybe only been here a month, but enjoying working with him. And as you touched on there, the competitive season doesn't start until January and it finishes in May. So short season, but a competitive one.
And do you think that, like, in terms of the season structure there with such a long pre-season, the Japanese side, the club sides and international side are famed for their fitness, but they're also famed for being really organised, really disciplined, high skill level. Is the pre-season similar to what you do here, or is it more skill orientated? Is it more speed orientated? Is it, how, you know, because over like a 4 month period, that's a long time to plan and get your periodization right. But are there big differences, or is it just quite similar but over a longer duration?
Yeah, I would say overall, mostly probably quite similar. They obviously, I think, because they're a lot of the players that get selected, they're a bit smaller, certainly on that international level. So they try and sort of mirror the way they want to play in the league setup in terms of real speed and skill. And so the emphasis is on that. Certainly here at NTT Comms, Shining Arcs, the team I play for, we probably fell down a little bit last year in terms of our skill set a little bit. So that, you know, the sort of the bigger teams, the better skill sets, were able to put us under a bit of pressure. So that's certainly what we're working on. So I guess for us, having that longer pre-season this time around is really good, especially with somebody like Rob Penny coming in. And Rob's actually coached at NTT Comms before. He was here about 5 years ago. So right. So he knows the club. But yeah, so a real emphasis on fitness and skill set is probably the two main things.
Yeah, he's a good coach. I remember coming across him and spending a bit of time in New Zealand and coaching courses, and I was just struck by, I think he played in the back row as a player, big, gnarly Kiwi back row, looks as tough as they come, but he wants to play an attacking brand of rugby. Obviously, it's similar to what he did with the Crusaders, but then Munster, I think, Waratahs as well. So it'll be, what I see from him, or what I've seen from him, looks as if it'll suit what you want to try and do as a nine and as a club, really, to play that tempo, to find that attacking edge.
Yeah, definitely. Already you can see his influence of that sort of Crusaders type style. And, you know, he coached there a few years back, but I think that's his sort of real ethos around about the game is really playing that positive manner and, you know, attack from anywhere on the field. So I think he'll really suit sort of coaching in the Japanese league, because as I touched on before, pretty much most of the teams kind of play similar styles. Mm-hmm. You know, that fast attack from anywhere. So it does get quite loose, but really fun to play in, and he's sort of, he's obviously just really trying to upskill us and put us under pressure in training. So it's an excellent environment to work in.
Have you got any of the national team players in your squad, the Japanese national team players?
Yeah, we have two of the foreign members, Shane Gates and Jimmy Moore, James Moore. Mm-hmm. So Shane came over when Japan played against the Lions and Ireland. He got his first cap. I think he came off the bench against Ireland. He never played against the Lions. Shane's originally from South Africa, centre. You know, good player. He's just getting back. This is his second season after a fairly bad injury. And James Moore, originally from Australia, second row. He's been in Japan for a few years down in Sanex, and he's only just came up to us this season. So I've only really known him for a month, but the guys actually left today to join up with Japan because they play Australia over here pretty soon.
Yeah. Did has the guy James Moore mentioned any times you've played against him?
No, he's good. Not. yeah, exactly. He would get the stare off me if you mentioned that most.
Great, right. Because he was a key player. We're going to build up to you know, Scotland Japan game in November and pick your brains in one or two bits. But he was in the, well, the 2015, but mainly 2019, a pretty integral part of that Japanese side and how they played. So it'll be good to pick his brains as well and pass on the knowledge for us for November. But competitive games for you don't start until January. And your first season over there was disrupted like everybody else's was with the pandemic. But with a kind of prolonged pre-season, you've already said, what are the aims, what are the goals for I suppose you as an individual and the team going into the competitive season?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think for me as an individual, I really want to enjoy my rugby this season. Last year, as you've kind of touched on there, mostly it was difficult with disruptions and we were pretty erratic in terms of our form and stuff as well. So it was quite a difficult first season. But this year, I really want to enjoy it. Just sort of, you know, get out there, really try and express myself, you know, have a lot of fun, try and pass all my sort of knowledge I've learned over the years onto the one of the Japanese players and also the other foreign boys in the team as well. You know, because I don't know how much longer I will end up playing. So, yeah, just the enjoyment factor, being competitive as an individual as well as a team. Because, you know, it's much better when you're winning. So, yeah, hopefully we can turn over a couple of the big teams and see what happens.
I'm giggling at the enjoyment part because I know you will enjoy it, but there'll still be an element of that bad-tempered nature will come out somewhere, will it? You kind of let go of that. I can see you getting frustrated once or twice and just getting angry. That'll never leave you, Greg.
No, that'll never leave me, most, as you probably know, better than most. We're playing a bit of a touch game the other day in training. Somebody decided to run a little bit too far, so it nearly came out already. So that's part of the game, you know, and that's I guess, my competitive edge. That's why I'm probably still playing.
Well, you'll never lose that. You'll never lose that. Touch is the worst as well. Everybody assumes that a lot of the anger comes out during contact training or games, but it's not. Every level, I bet there's people that listen to this, like junior level or club level or international level, whatever. It'll still be the same. There'll be somebody that runs too far at touch and causes a stramash, isn't it? It's good to know it happens on the other side of the world as well.
There's always serial offenders as well, I think. Boys that do all the time.
And they run with their knees up really hard. Everybody else screaming touch until somebody else kind of pole axes them. Some things never change. But yeah, I suppose if we look ahead to the game in November, Scotland obviously had a disrupted summer as well with you know, the tour not going ahead and the fixtures not going ahead, but had a really strong Six Nations prior to that. So there'll be a lot of continuity from them. We'll probably touch on the Lions a wee bit later on and the Lions players coming back to add a bit of value and knowledge as well. But I know it's a long way off, but you said that the Japanese team are meeting up, you know, now for a camp. Where do you think, from what you know, what you pick up there, they ain't going to change their style of play, are they? The Japanese. No. So where do you think in their cycle they'll be? Are they haven't lost many players since the last World Cup either, and you say added one or two in that summer period. So where do you think they sit? What's the challenge for Scotland come the 20th of November?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think, you know, just touching on the Japanese team, I think they're really just trying to still ride that wave from the 2019 World Cup, to be honest.
Do they still refer to it in the media and everything? Is it still spoken about?
Yeah, I mean, more so probably the media side and stuff. And obviously, they're well coached, mostly, you know, Jamie Joseph and you know, some of the coaching staff, Tony Brown. And they probably get frustrated, I guess, looking back. But, you know, obviously, they're proud people. And I think, you know, they deserve to talk about it because they've done well. And I think they won't change the style of play. They're just going to keep trying to develop it. And I think there's really interest in that Lions game. And obviously, in the summer over in BT Murrayfield there, you know, you could see Japan, they actually really got into the game come the end of the game. I think they were really speaking to Shane Gates, who plays at the same club as me. And, you know, they were really sort of frustrated that they never got that going earlier in the game. So that'll be their style of play, very much the way they played in the World Cup and anybody that's watched them since. So, you know, it's going to be a tough test match for the boys. You know, it'll be the fourth test match. And, you know, so Japan will be up and running, but, you know, I'm sure the Scotland boys will be as well.
It's funny that thinking back to that game, against the Lions, they like you can see exactly what Japan are trying to do. And I think it really tested the lines, in all honesty. But where it, even early on, they got better, as you say, towards the end of the game. But I still think the shape of Japan tested lines, but they just never had that incisive edge, you know, early on to break them down. But yeah, I just, it's enjoyable to watch as well, the way they play, isn't it? Like it is, it must be a job at play, but it's enjoyable to watch. But do the national coaches, mentioned Tony Brown and Jamie Joseph, do they have an influence at all on the club teams? Do they come and watch training? Do they, are they able to, can influence how Rob Penny structures his game? Or is it very much, you know, club and country being quite quite separate?
Yeah, from what I sort of know, it's a very much two separate things. That they don't seem to have any influence, certainly at the club level. But I know, I think Tony Brown's obviously got a connection with Panasonic and stuff. He played there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know he started his coaching career there, I believe. So I think there's connections, and I think that's just the general sort of consensus here in Japan, is that's the best way to play rugby.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the way the national team really want to play. So everybody else is like, well, that's the way we should play as well.
Yeah.
I think so
they almost don't need to have an influence. The influence is there anyway, but by what they do, the success they've had.
Yeah, I think so. And I think obviously with the national team playing really well, I think everybody's sort of looking in from the outside, being in the clubs, they sort of say, like, this is the way we want to play. And it's obviously really entertaining. And I think, you know, if Japan get it going, they're almost like the French a little bit in terms of if they get going and playing really well, you can just see the sort of enthusiasm spread throughout the team. So, you know, certainly when our boys come up against them in November, defensively, you've got to be rock solid and almost, you know, flip it on its head a little bit and try and turn them over and play and attack off turnover ball.
Mm-hmm. It seems a long time ago now, but and we don't like going back. But the Six Nations was pretty good in patches, or very good in patches for the national team. Obviously, winning away in Twickenham, winning away in Paris. I suppose from a distance, what do you expect for Scotland in November? I know they haven't played through the summer, and I know it's difficult. The URC season's just kicked off and got up and running, so it, you know, we're looking ahead, you know, quite far ahead. But do you? Well, you would have been proud of how Scotland performed last year, but you still think they can add to that, improve, and we'll have to improve with the foot of the fixtures we've got in November.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, touching on the fixtures in November first, it'll be really important for the boys to get back together as quick as they can. You know, from the club stuff, and
because
you
know, that's a long break. Sorry to interrupt, but that's a long break, isn't it? Really, with considering the players you had away in the Lions, coaches had away in the Lions, it is a long time since that group has been together, whichever the group turns out to be. And that traditionally has been one of our strengths over the recent years, isn't it? That togetherness, that shared goal, the shared kind of belief of what you're trying to do. So you're right, that'll probably be the first hurdle, really, or the first thing to focus on getting right.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they won't talk about, you know, using it as sort of momentum to come into the Six Nations, but you know, it's the Six Nations is obviously, you know, really, really important. I think that they'll look to build on the performances from the autumn tests leading into that Six Nations period again, because as we've touched on there with the sort of disruption, the boys or the team have not been together for such a long time but you know, touching on the Lions stuff, I think all the boys showed up exceptionally well on the Lions tour, so they should really come back with a whole sort of heap of confidence, and it'll be brilliant. You know what it was like when you know you'd played well the last time, and you come back into that sort of environment together again, all that sort of feeling and emotion comes back. So they really need to try and harness that, and you know, and understand why they've done well in the last Six Nations, and really use that to help them push forward going into the autumn and then the Six Nations.
When you toured with the Lions and then came back into the Scotland environment, did you feel a pressure to pass on everything you'd learned, or was it more, and probably knowing you, I know the answer to this, but was it more actually not everything the Lions did was as good, better than the national team? Some things were, so almost a filtering process. So how can we make Scotland better for what I've picked up, but also how can I help make Scotland better with actually some of the stuff we've learned that we're actually doing better anyway? So do you feel a pressure to kind of help grow the team, or or is it just like any other time you meet up, regardless of being with the Lions 2 or 3 months before?
Yeah, I think, like, I didn't really feel so that sort of pressure was, and I just almost, if there was anything good from the Lions, you know, I'd try and sort of pick that out and say, this is what they've done here, and or some of the players done this, I think we should maybe try that, and, you know, this could maybe help us. But, you know, as you say, I think, in the way Scotland try and play, like, it's probably different from certainly the way the Lions have played in the last couple of tests. So, you know, a lot of things don't really cross over, and I'm a firm believer in the way Scotland are trying to play the game is the right way to do it. You know, we've got to be a little bit more creative in Scotland because, you know, generally we have smaller players. So we've got to use that to our strength, you know, and be really smart in the way we play. And certainly the boys done that in the last Six Nations. And that's, you know, you could see certainly in that England game, it was awesome to watch because, you know, England were just kicking us the ball and it was like, you know, just keep attacking and Scotland were loving it. So, you know, I think Scotland just need to really stick to their guns and just keep progressing their, you know, their skill sets, keep developing under pressure. And if they do that, they'll get even better results going into this Six Nations, I think.
Another thing that will help undoubtedly is that famous atmosphere at VT Murrayfield. We hope they get, you know, well, we'll have fans back. We assume it's a long time away, but it looks as if it's going to be, you know, a couple of sellouts already at VT Murrayfield. I know it's an obvious question and everybody gets asked it all the time, but it does just intrigue people. The impact of those fans back at VT Murrayfield on, you know, what probably be a cold Saturday afternoon again, though, it's just brilliant, isn't it? It just like gives everybody a massive boost.
It does. And as you say, it's maybe, you know, the obvious answer. Yeah, mostly, but it's really hard to describe. Like when you're coming into Murrayfield and on that team bus, and you're feeling all sorts of emotions, but it makes such a difference. Like the whole connection to the country, the, you know, everything that goes along with it. It's an experience, you know, I'm very humbled to have had in the past, and for the players that have earned that right to, you know, to experience it, it's just awesome. And, you know, it's brilliant already to see. I think the South Africa game's already been announced as a sellout. So the boost that it gives to the players alone is just awesome. And I think, you know, obviously the challenge on the field is one thing, but I think, you know, pleasing the supporters and again, also the way Scotland are trying to play again, coming back to that, is I think touching on the Lions and the last sort of test match they played, you look at the way Finn came on and played, and you know, he was awesome, but then the sort of knock-on effect and bringing other people into the game as well. Yeah, like, you never seen any of the sort of back three players in the first two tests because they were just chasing kicks. But, you know, if Scotland can get going and get the crowd involved, there's no better place to be.
Especially with a fixture like Japan, because you know they will do that. You know, it is going to tee off. A couple of things on that, on Finn's performance off the bench in the Lions. And we've spoken to Finn, and it was really good and really open in terms of the technical aspects of it and how he felt. But I suppose question for you, did you have a wee giggle when he came on like everybody else? A smile just immediately comes over your face because you just knew what was going to happen, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I had a good old laugh to myself when I seen him sort of trot on, and I was kind of thinking, is he tied his boots yet, or is he going to do that soon? So, but I'd say it's just infectious, isn't it?
And I know.
You could see that the players almost, you know, have a sort of fresh, you know, breath really breathed into them, and they were just really excited to see him on the field, and that's what he does. He, as much as he's you know, awesome, and he sees things for himself, he brings other people and into the game and puts the fences under pressure. And you know, I think the Lions probably struggled in the first two games to break down the South African defence, but they really got going in that third test. So you know, that's a sort of insight for Scotland as to how to play against them, and obviously knowing Gregor and the way they want to play, Scotland can hopefully do that. And you know, and you've got to play with speed against South Africa to put them under pressure. And you probably saw that the last two weekends the way Australia have played. So it's a really exciting series actually, because Australia are starting to look strong. Japan plays similar type of brand rugby. South Africa are different, but they're world champions. So it's a great test for the team.
It is. It's different tests. It's what you need in international rugby. Tonga first up as well. Bring that physicality. They have some brilliant individuals as well. So it is a great series. One other thing to go back on, just that you said there about that arrival at BT Murrayfield on match day, and in the moment it's special. But I suppose a question we can both answer: are there still times now where you go back to those moments more than some of the things that happen on the pitch? If you know what I mean, there'll be times
when you're paying, you're walking about Seminole Spring in mind, and you can go right back to that moment on the bus, isn't it? The how you feel, what it feels like, the nerves, potentially the worry, the concern, the pride. You go right back to it instantly, don't you?
It's funny. It's the strangest of feelings you do, mostly, and it's. I always remember like getting on the bus from the hotel, and as you, it's the emotion. Really quiet. Thing. It's everybody's quiet, and it's just a straight. It's almost a strange Aye. Place to be. It's, and I used to hate the sort of the first, you know, however many minutes it used to take to get to BD Murrayfield, but then the last little bit was always awesome when you got there and you felt the atmosphere, and you just went through your preparation after that. But oh, there's times you think about it, and you know, crikey, you miss it, and it's awesome. But it was, you know, an awesome thing to have been able to have done. And as I say, I think it's awesome for the boys that have earned that right to pull on the jersey now and experience the same thing.
Yeah, they'll look forward to each and every one of them. I suppose you'll not have a huge amount of spare time in Japan, knowing the training regime, but how's the family? How's life in Japan? Weather's great, food's great, culture's great. Taking in your stride, you look happy, you've got a big beaming smile on your face, and obviously your goal, quite rightly, is to enjoy the rugby on field. But off field, it must be a brilliant life experience as well for you out there.
Honestly, mostly we're having so much fun. It's obviously completely different, and there's a lot of difficult times in terms of, you know, the, you know, people, you know, looking on say, oh, it must be awesome, and it's good, but it's some of the admin, and you know, there's never an easy trip to the supermarket. you know, if you need to, you know, paying bills, and you know, there's nothing in English, like nothing in terms of like the bills. You get stuff, and you're just like, oh crikey me, I need more help. And
did the club is there help available?
Yeah, that's what I was. Our club are awesome. To be fair, we've got two full time translators, a team manager who's just assigned to the foreign guys who really helps us out. But you know, it's tough. But the family are doing really well. My oldest son, he goes to international school. So he gets on the school bus. And away he goes in the morning, and then comes back in the afternoon. So he's doing really well. The young fella, he's still kicking and screaming a little bit at the gates in the morning. They're probably thinking, here's this mad Scotsman coming again to school. But he's doing well. He goes to kindergarten and nursery, they call it over here, because he's still a bit younger. When they basically have, it's Japanese, but they have like English speaking support staff. So that's a challenge as well. But we're learning every day and taking it in our stride.
Good on you. It's that is an awesome kind of life experience. And who knows what happens after this season? It was 2 years you signed. Was it 2 plus 1? Was it 2 years?
Yeah, 2 years. 2 years I signed. Coming in the last season of my contract. At the moment. As I said, with Rob Penny coming in, obviously he's a brand new coach for me to work with. So, yeah, I'm not in any rush to decide what I'm going to be doing next. Just focus on enjoying it and basically looking forward to the rugby starting back up and, you know, playing a couple of games again.
And obviously you've played and had success in England and France, in Scotland, Japan. Are you keeping tabs of the URC, United Rugby Championship, started last weekend with them in Glasgow? Kicking off the French league and the English leagues have been, you know, a couple of weeks ahead or a week ahead or so. Are you still able to touch base and keep up with, well, I suppose your teammates, former teams, at the shape of the game as well? I know you're kind of desire to be involved in rugby and understand rugby and the shape of the game, new laws, new changes. Have you been able to keep it up an eye on things?
Yeah, I think it's really exciting, the URC there. Mostly and definitely keeping up. And, you know, I think it was awesome, certainly from looking, putting my Edinburgh glasses back on and seeing the team really perform well in their first game in the new league setup. You know, just everything really with the new stadium. And I think, obviously, the brand of rugby, they'll probably try and play, obviously, under Mike. You know, and sort of Mike's connection with the club, obviously, he was a huge part of, you know, our time at the club, and you know, certainly somebody I learned a huge amount of at the time, and also with his coaching as well. So yeah, brilliant to see Edinburgh start like that, and You know, and certainly the supporters in behind it as well. And you know, hopefully both teams can get going and in that competition and really feed into the national team as well.
I know. And have you seen? Are you expecting any changes in terms of we've got law changes? It hasn't made a massive influence yet. I know the law changes are global. Is it something you're working on in terms of pre-season? The game's quick anyway over there, and I think a lot of the law changes have been trying to influence the speed of the game or quicken the speed of the game, but probably have less effect for you guys than it maybe would potentially have for Northern Hemisphere rugby. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that's probably a fair comment, Mossy, to be honest, because everything here is, you know, hold on to the ball, build pressure with the ball, and you know, rather than that sort of kick inside of it. And I think it always helps with the weather as well. Mm-hmm. The weather's generally nice over here, so I think in terms of the law changes, I think the law changes are fairly good, to be honest. You know, anything to speed the game up, make it more positive, is a really good thing, and certainly that's something we're trying to work on here at NTT. Also, is a sort of positive kicking game that we briefly touched on just before we came on there. And, you know, hopefully it's going to lead to more tries, more open space and a more free-flowing game.
Good. Well, good luck with that. Good luck to you and the team. It's great to catch up with you again, Greg. We could speak for hours. You won't make it over for the November series, the Nations Cup November, will you?
No,
you'll be still in pre-season.
I'll still be in pre-season then. So spare a thought for me.
Thanks, Greg. Great to chat to you.
Likewise. Cheers, Moss.
Glasgow Warriors and Edinburgh are back at home this weekend against South African opposition in the United Rugby Championship. Glasgow Warriors will face the Lions at Scotland Stadium on Saturday, 9th of October at 3:05. Meanwhile, Edinburgh welcome the Stormers to the Damhealth Stadium on Saturday at 5:15, looking for their second win of the season under new head coach Mike Blair. Tickets for the Glasgow Warriors game are on sale now at glasgowwarriors.org. Tickets for the Edinburgh match can be purchased from edinburghrugby.org.